Art. Hecate's actual cockpit was different from the VR simulations. The differences were subtle, but significant. For one thing, the foot pedals that controlled the thrusters and diving planes were a couple of centimeters too far away for my boots to reach comfortably. I had to stretch my legs and point my toes to get a solid contact with the pedals. In those Frankenstein boots I had to wear, that was a guaranteed method of developing leg cramps. Or foot cramps. Or both. The layout of the controls was the same, thank goodness. But Hecate didn't respond to the controls in the same smooth, clean fashion as the virtual reality sim. As I went through the checklist, lying there in the heat suit and sweating bullets even before the ship was released from Lucifer's hold, it seemed to me that there was a slight lag between my touching a control and the response from the ship's systems. It was only a tiny hesitation, but it was noticeable and annoying. I was wondering if there was some way to speed up the ship's response even while we went through the checklist and started the separation countdown. In my helmet earphones, I heard Fuchs ask perfunctorily,
T-minus 2 minutes and counting. Any problems?
No, I said, quite unprofessionally. Everything's pretty good here. He caught the doubt in my voice.
Pretty good? What does that mean?
The countdown would go into automatic mode at T-minus 1 minute, we both knew. This was no time to try to fiddle with the control responses. Nothing, forget it. Ready for separation sequence. Silence from the bridge until the computer's synthesized voice came on. T-minus 1 minute. Separation sequence engaged. Right, I said. T-minus 50 seconds. Internal power on. I heard pumps start chugging. The instrument panel flickered for an eye blink, then its lights steadied. I knew my suit's cooling system was working. I could hear the tiny fan buzzing in my helmet, yet I was already drenched with sweat. Nerves. Nothing but nerves.
T-minus 30 seconds. Bay hatch opening.
Through Hecate's thick hull and my own suit's heavy insulation, I heard the low rumble of the hatch swinging back slowly. From my position, flat on my belly and Hecate's pointed nose, I looked down at the thick quartz panel set into the floor of the cockpit just below the instrument board. All I saw was the inside of my stupid helmet. I had to twist my head and crane my neck to see the window through the tiny faceplate of my helmet. And there it was. The sullen, incandescent surface of Venus, glowing like a sea of molten lava. I could feel that heat boiling up at me, clutching for me. I knew it was my imagination. We were still several kilometers above the surface, yet I felt the hot breath of the planet smothering me. I stared at those red-hot rocks as the countdown ticked away.
3, 2, 1,
release, said the computer's impassive voice. With a heart-stopping bang, the latches that held Hecate firmly in their grip suddenly released, and I was falling through the thick, still air of Venus, toward its distant, hard surface. I was frozen with terror, paralyzed as I felt my stomach surging up into my throat. It was like dropping down the longest elevator shaft in the universe toward a blazing hot furnace. But slowly, slowly as in a nightmare. Fuchs's voice crackled in my earphones.
Hurled headlong, flaming from the ethereal sky, this hideous ruin and combustion down to bottomless perdition.
And he laughed. Laughed. That broke my terrified paralysis. I kicked at the pedals, ran my fingers across the controllers, struggled to get Hecate leveled off and gliding properly.
Pull her nose up, Fuchs commanded. Don't dive her. Get your speed right and she'll sink at her natural rate.
Right, I said, kicking the pedals and working the touchpad controls as furiously as I could.
"You're over-controlling her!" he shouted so loud in my earphones it made me wince.
I was desperately trying to get the feel of the controls. They didn't respond the way the VR sim did. I got a flash of memory from the first time I tried to ride a horse and realized that this substitute for an automobile had a mind of its own. It did not respond mechanically to my steering.
I should have gone down myself, Fuchs was grumbling.
Slowly I was getting the feel of the controls.
but a glance at the course profile indicator on the panel showed me I was far off my intended speed and angle of descent. The dive plane control felt especially stiff. The pedal barely budged even when I tried to kick it. The flight plan was for me to spiral down toward the Phosphorus's wreckage, while Fuchs kept Lucifer circling overhead some 3 kilometers up. I was scanning the wreckage with every instrument aboard Hecate, which wasn't really all that much, radar, infrared, and optical sensors. The infrared was practically useless, swamped by the enormous heat flow from the surface. Greenbaum's theory of planetary upheaval popped into the front of my mind. What if Venus decided to overturn its surface right now, at this precise time? A volcano had erupted less than 1,000 kilometers from here. What if everything down there suddenly began to melt, and all the stored heat that's been trapped deep below ground suddenly comes bursting out? Murphy's Law on a planetary scale. After 500 million years of waiting, the planet decides to blow off its surface while I'm there. I'd be roasted in a minute. Not even Lucifer could escape the catastrophe. That's not going to happen, I told myself sternly. Put it out of your mind. I remembered the gloomy look on Greenbaum's face when he admitted that there was practically no chance that the cataclysm would happen while we were there to observe it, or be incinerated by it more likely. Stay on the profile, Fuchs snapped. I was struggling to do just that, but I wasn't succeeding fast enough to avoid stirring his wrath. Gritting my teeth, I traced my fingertips across the touchpads, feeling more like a child playing with a magnetic sketching toy than an intrepid astronaut making the first controlled descent to the surface of Venus. "Where's your imagery?" Fuchs demanded. I saw from the control panel that I hadn't switched on the channel that telemetered the pictures for Hecate's sensors. "On its way," I said, imitating the clipped tone of astronauts I remembered from old videos. I put the optical camera view on my own screen right in front of my face. Now I could see why Fuchs was complaining. It showed nothing but bare, hot rocks. It should have been focused on the wreckage. Gradually, I smoothed out Hecate's flight, got the ship on course. I wasn't using the thrusters. They weren't needed until I had to lift from the surface, so I put both my booted feet on the pedal that controlled the diving planes. It was a little easier to work them that way. Sure enough, my calf muscles started cramping, hard enough to make me want to scream from the pain. But I kept at it, grimly determined to get down to the wreckage and find what was left of my brother's body. In a way, it really was like riding a horse. Hecate had a will of her own, and I had to learn to deal with it. The controls were terribly stiff and slow to respond, but little by little I got the feel of them and focused the sensors on the wreckage below. It wasn't anything like flying. Venus's atmosphere was so thick that my descent was more like a submarine groping for the bottom of the ocean. There wasn't much to see at first. Phosphorus's gas envelope had collapsed over most of the ship's gondola. I could only see one end of the gondola sticking out from beneath the warped, twisted metal. Huge sections were missing, eaten away, it looked like. They must have spent even more time in the bug-laden clouds than we had in Hesperus, with disastrous results. As I edged lower, I began to see the characteristic streaks of charring along what little of the gondola was visible beneath the crumpled envelope. The envelope itself was smudged and streaked with the dark stains from the bugs in the clouds. Phosphorus wasn't sabotaged, I realized. It didn't have to be. Those aerobacteria destroyed my brother's ship just as they had destroyed my own. Then I noticed something strange. Curving lines crisscrossed the wreckage. A dozen or more thin lines, almost like twine or string, looped around a package. I wondered what they were. Nothing I remembered from the design drawings or pictures of Phosphorus showed strapping or any other kind of structural supports strung across the gas envelope. Curious. "Spiral in tighter," Fuchs commanded. "Stay focused on the wreckage." "That's what I'm trying to do," I said, feeling testy. "Don't try," he sneered. "Do." I snapped, "You come and do it if you don't like the way I'm handling it." He went silent. I could see the wreckage in more detail as I descended cautiously through the thick air. It was clear enough, no haze or dust in the air, but the pressure was so high that it was like peering through seawater. Things were distorted, twisted. At first, I couldn't tell which end of the gondola was sticking out, but as I got closer, I recognized the forward.